I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The weekend capture of Saddam Hussein is a reminder of that other face on the U.S. military's most wanted list. The leader of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, remains at large, so much so, in fact, that people aren't really sure which country he's even in. It could be Pakistan, where there was an assassination attempt on Pakistani President Musharraf over the weekend. Could be Afghanistan, where a couple of small rockets were lobbed into the capital city, Kabul, earlier today. But wherever Osama bin Laden is hiding, and wherever the Taliban leaders like Mullah Omar have taken refuge, there are growing reasons to believe that they are regrouping and rearming. Today on the program, we look at the latest in the search for the people who really were the ones behind the attacks of 9/11. We invite you to join us with your thoughts. Is this the time to put new troops and new money towards the search for Osama bin Laden? After all, he has his own financial backers and the support of thousands of people. Or turn it around. Do you think, as some suggest, that the U.S. is perhaps better off leaving bin Laden alone rather than capturing him and taking the risk of turning him into even more of a hero to his followers? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to start today's program by talking with a couple of reporters who are following the resurgence of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda on both sides of the border. Scott Baldoff is South Asian correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He is in Kabul, Afghanistan, covering the Loya Jirga, the meeting that is underway there. But he says the capture of Saddam Hussein is big news there.
I've talked to a number of people. Not so many of the participants in the Loya Jirga were kept away from them, but I have talked to some of the more educated Afghans here in Kabul. Their perception is that obviously they're very excited about the fact that the Americans have managed to come up with a very strong success in Iraq. And the concern here all along has been why they have been unable to capture Mullah Omar or Osama bin Laden or some of the other characters that America has been looking for in Afghanistan. So now that they can see that the Americans are doing well in Iraq, it gives them a bit of hope.
Hope that there will be more money, more American soldiers put into the hunt for both bin Laden and Mullah Omar? Is that what they're hoping for?
Well, that's a good chunk of it. Yes, there's a perception that if the Americans can wind up or make some successes in Iraq, then maybe some of the money that could have been spent here in Iraq, in Afghanistan, to secure the countryside and to bring better development here, that might help Afghanistan a lot more.
I understand, Scott, that a little bit earlier today there were a couple of rockets come into Kabul and that the Taliban people have claimed responsibility for those. I'm not sure if you heard anything of that from where you are.
Yes, we've talked with some police sources about this. It's difficult for them to know precisely who it was who did it, so they have to sort of take the Taliban at their word if that, in fact, was the Taliban who called in. The way rocket attacks often happen here, a lot of them are set up and shot off by some very ingenious remote control style devices. It's very difficult to be able to find the perpetrators after the fact. As it happened, the rockets took off around midnight last night and landed in the southern part of the city. Causing some damage to houses, but not injuring anybody.
The reason I'm asking you about that, Scott, is I know you've been doing your own reporting on what's happening there, and I'm wondering if you're picking up evidence of what we hear, and that is that there's a resurgence, a regrouping, a rearming, not only of Al-Qaeda, but also of the Taliban.
Well, absolutely. Just last week, I was in Quetta in Pakistan, and we managed rather easily to link up with a few Taliban figures and also a few politicians who were close to the Taliban. They indicated that they were having no trouble getting money, most of it coming from the Pakistani people, there are many of them who are of the same ethnic group of Pashtuns as the Taliban belong to. They also, some folks also suggested they were still getting money from some of these terrorist-associated charities, the Al-Rashid Trust being one of the more prominent ones. There does appear to be some regrouping. There does appear to be a rearmament, and there are bolder actions taken by the Taliban, although most of the actions have been taken against aid workers, softer targets, which indicates they may not be ready to go up against the U.S. military or even against the Afghan forces.
So as we try to understand what's going on in Afghanistan, tell me in your view, Scott, is it similar to what we've been seeing in Iraq, where there are foreign insurgents coming in and joining up with locals? Or would you say that the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda is still at this point primarily Afghan fighters? What can you tell us about that?
There does indeed appear to be a large number of foreign fighters, but most of them, most of the foreign element seem to be coming from Pakistan. Many of them are students at these religious seminaries who feel a duty to go and defend the faith against American, what they consider to be invaders. The Al-Qaeda element still seems to be present in Afghanistan, but there have been reports that a lot of the Al-Qaeda fighters have chosen to pick up and move off to Iraq, where presumably the action is more exciting. The bulk of the fighting is being done by Afghans.
Last question, Scott. Are the people in Afghanistan angry? Are they saying, you know, why is it that the United States is putting so much time and money and troops into Iraq and so little here? And would you go so far as to say that the people there are getting really annoyed with the United States over this?
Well, the Afghan opinion one hears most often is that this was ill-advised. They would have preferred to have been the only war that in America's mind, and that America's full concentration could be placed on securing the security situation in Afghanistan and also controlling the Taliban incursions along the border. But I think that the Afghan people historically have been able to live without other countries' attention in the past. They're kind of used to being left behind. They're hoping it doesn't happen again.
Scott, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Scott Baldoff is South Asian correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He's in Kabul, Afghanistan. Let's turn now to Karachi, the southern port city of Pakistan. Masood Ansari is a senior reporter with the Pakistani news magazine Newsline, and he's joining us on the line from there. Hello, Masood.
Yeah, hi.
I gather that in the last few months you've been making a number of trips into the tribal areas of both Pakistan and Afghanistan. In fact, I read one of your pieces where you also go to Quetta and describe the black turbans of the Taliban people all over the place.
Well, I mean, that is right. I mean, some of the areas, like if in Quetta, like Pashtunabad and all that, if you could go there, you would see there's a lot of people they're wearing turbans and roaming around in the town, and that, similar outfit which the Taliban had been wearing. And obviously they crossed over to Pakistan after the fall of Kandahar, and they're simply residing in Pakistani sites, not only in Quetta, but the tribal areas. I mean, the tribal areas in Pakistan, is divided by the Durand Line, but the people, they had been crisscrossing this border because on the both sides of the border, these people from Pashtun community, they live on the both sides of the border, and they have relatives they're living on the Pakistani side and the other side.
Masood, let me ask you to tell me a little bit about this character Abdul Zahir, who you traveled with. This man was actively recruiting and allowed you to go along with him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he comes from, again, a Pashtun tribe, and he's from Qila Abdullah, which is close to Afghanistan border. I mean, he was in Afghanistan, but he told me that initially he was part of Taliban regime, and they had to sit as sleepers. But after this Mullah Umar, he announced 10-member shura. They were asked that jihad has started. So he just was told to convince people in his area and ask them to come and fight, maybe, to go either to fight at the front line or to to work as male nurse or maybe to contribute for jihad in terms of financing the movement.
Now, these people are all going to work for the Taliban. Were you seeing any recruiting of Al-Qaeda people at the same time?
Well, I mean, you know, at the moment, it's more, you know, they're interlinked, basically, you know, in general terms, because, you know, they have only one cause to fight against America. You know, they're saying, you know, as your, you know, the other colleague, he was saying that they're saying that their country is being invaded by Americans. So it is their religious duty to go and fight for their liberation.
When you talk to the people who say they are with the Taliban, why is it, Masood, that they're not afraid that they're going to be arrested, they're going to be picked up and sent off to Guantanamo or something like that?
Well, I mean, it is more their indoctrination. It is more their training and the, you know, the social milieu. I mean, like, all that area is highly, you know, this religiously charged. The people, I mean, you know, most of them just, they don't have formal schools. They go to religious seminaries where the, you know, jihad or holy war is one of the main part of their lessons. So, you know, for them, it is jihad. It is a holy duty to go. And they, I mean, like you're talking about a race. They are not scared of their life. They want to die. I mean, they want to even commit suicide attacks against, you know, the international troops.
But you're also saying that these
they're
are...
They're not scared of any arrest.
But these are not places then where American soldiers can go and say, right, you guys get into the back of the truck.
Well, still, like, because at the moment, I mean, you know, what I was told that at the moment what they're basically doing is to keep their movement alive, because they are saying that they don't want to capture Afghanistan at this stage, because simply they know that they cannot withstand the air strike or, you know, B-52, you know, the air strikes of the Americans. So what they are doing is, you know, simply they want to keep their movement alive, and they know that these Americans, they cannot live there for all their life. And once they leave the country, they think that they can take over Afghanistan, or, you know, within the next day. Even I was talking to some of their leaders, and they told me that even today, it is no difficult for them to capture any area. Even they can go and take over Kabul tomorrow. But the problem is to withstand it. They said they cannot, you know, withstand the air strikes.
And it's easier for them to find recruits today. There are more willing people ready to fight with them today.
Yeah, I think so. Because, like, you know, most of the areas that they're operating, it's, you know, as I said, the Pashtun-dominated areas, and they're operating in... you know, they're going and convincing people in these religious seminaries where the atmosphere is highly, you know, anti-American and in more of a jihad. So, I mean, I don't think so it's any problem for them to go and find people who could just join them at the front line.
Masood, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much.
Masood Ansari is a senior reporter with the Pakistani news magazine Newsline, also contributes to the London Sunday Telegraph, the Asia Times, and to the New Republic. All right, time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Jessica Stern, lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. She's here in our studio. Stephen Simon will be with us. He is a senior analyst at the Rand Institute, a research and analysis think tank, co-author of a book called The Age of Sacred Terror. And Connection listeners, we'd like to have you in on our conversation as well. Is this the time to put new troops and new money toward finding Osama bin Laden? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, and a chance for us in the shadow of the news of the capture of Saddam Hussein to take a look at the one person who has been eluding the capture for an even longer period of time, if you count the we mark it from the Iraq war, and that is Osama bin Laden, and in fact the leaders of the Taliban, Mullah Muhammad Omar and others. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, and we're asking you in our conversation on whether or not it's time to put new troops and new money towards finding these people. With me in the studio here, Jessica Stern. She's a lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and author of a book called Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. Jessica, nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And Stephen Simon is a senior analyst at the RAND Institute, a research and analysis think tank. He was a senior director for counterterrorism at the White House National Security Council under President Clinton. He's joining us from the Christian Science Monitor studio in Washington. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
So, some reactions just to what we've heard from Massoud and also from Scott. Stephen, why don't you start? This news that the recruiting continues apace, is that have you known that for a while?
Yes. It shouldn't come as any surprise. Outside of Kabul, there's little certainly there's little American presence. The military presence generally is quite small. The emphasis on the part of the United States is very much on Kabul. So one wouldn't expect to see impediments to recruitment, and indeed there aren't. The interesting point, not that that's not interesting, was referred to by one of our colleagues out there in Pakistan, namely that there doesn't seem to be an inflow into Afghanistan of, let's call them Afghan Arabs, Arabs from other places coming in to do jihad. Thus far, it remains pretty much an indigenous phenomenon. The second thing, which wasn't mentioned but is worth noting, is that over against what our colleagues in Afghanistan reported on, Afghanistan and Pakistan, there has not yet been a rebuilding of training camps in Afghanistan. So I take that to be a favorable thing, although I suppose it's a matter of time until such things are established, if there isn't a greater U.S. and allied military presence in these regions.
Although, Jessica, it still does catch my attention that in a city the size of Quetta, it's as easy as both Scott and Massoud describe it to go to the mosques and meet the Taliban soldiers and hear them talking about biding their time and waiting for the Americans to leave. I had a sense that things were still a little bit more underground with the Taliban there.
No, I think Pakistan's role in this continuing battle in Afghanistan is extremely complicated, and the fact that those extremist madrasas are still serving as factories for jihad is deeply disturbing. I thought that what Massoud said about the indoctrination of these young men is extremely important to understand. These are young men, I've actually seen them, who really come to believe that this is the best way to be a good human being. They are also, even before September 11th, in many places in Pakistan where the extremist madrasas are serving often as orphanages, young boys are trained to hate Americans. And if you ask them, well, why do you hate Americans? And they'll say, don't know, but everyone hates Americans.
So, Stephen Simon, is this the time for the United States to say, now that we have Saddam Hussein, we can really concentrate on closing the noose around either Osama bin Laden or the Taliban leaders, wherever they all are?
Well, the question presupposes that there hasn't been a continuing effort to get Osama or Mullah Omar and the remnants of the Taliban leadership. There's been an ongoing effort. It may intensify slightly given the inspiration of Saddam Hussein's capture. But it's important to this administration, I think, to find bin Laden, and they're going to continue to look for him. But the practical barriers to finding him you know, are much different than the barriers Americans in Iraq faced in looking for Saddam Hussein.
But, Stephen, the numbers I have are something like 1,200 American troops in Afghanistan devoted to this, which, you know, it seems like a lot until you think about the fact that there are 120,000 in Iraq right now. I mean, that is there room for a shift of resources or for a concentration of new resources in that border area between Afghanistan and Pakistan?
I wouldn't think so. First of all, it needs to be said that the key to finding these people is good intelligence. I mean, you can have a million guys on the ground, but
right.
if you don't have the information telling you where your quarry is, then you're not going to find him. But as far as a vast shift of resources is concerned, or maybe even a modest shift of resources, highly unlikely in my view. I don't see the U.S. being able to draw down its presence below the 120,000 mark in Iraq for quite some time, perhaps a year. Let
me turn to Jessica on that and a quick correction, just as I do. 12,000 in Afghanistan, not 1,200, which is what I said. But Jessica, how important is it for the United States to concentrate its effort now on finding Osama bin Laden, being able to produce that photograph similar to the one we saw this weekend?
Well, I think it's very important that we continue to look for bin Laden. I certainly wouldn't dispute that, because the more pressure that's on him, the harder it is for him to communicate with his followers, and that should be our primary objective. But I'm concerned that if we were to capture him, things could get more difficult in the immediate term. First of all,
you mean better to know where he is and say, fine, let's just leave him in that valley and not pick him up?
Well, I'm not sure I'm prepared to say exactly that, but I certainly would say that in some ways it is easier for us if we keep him from communicating with his followers and certainly keep collecting intelligence. The intelligence is more important than the front page news story that allows us to tout our successes. In regard to al-Qaeda and bin Laden, in my view. And I guess this is one area where, Steve, and I might disagree.
Is that because the arrest of the man makes him perhaps even more of a martyr than he is to some of his followers today?
Yes, yes. I think it just becomes very difficult to know if the death penalty is chosen as the... if he's executed, that certainly could be a big... boost to his followers in the immediate term.
All right, let's see what our callers are thinking about this. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Hillsborough, North Carolina now. And Andy, you're with us. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say I don't have the answer. I know our policies are wrong, and our policy is totally reactionary. If you look at our Afghanistan now, I think this is what Iraq will look like in 2 years. You have to remember, we supported Osama bin Laden for years, and then we supported Saddam Hussein for years. We go in and invade each country and overthrow the government and set up a puppet government. I think probably Afghanistan, we have a president of Kabul, and that's all. We have no credibility. It wouldn't matter too much if Osama bin Laden was captured. It will give a blip in the polls for Bush. But somebody else will spring up. We have to change our policies in the Middle East. We have to stop supporting the Israelis at all costs and agreeing with everything they do with lip service and if they do anything wrong, and have a balanced policy in the Middle East. And if you look,
Andy, let me step in there if I can, because Jessica, if I'm not mistaken, where Andy started off with the idea that Afghanistan today is where Iraq is heading now is something that you also have warned about, with this kind of nexus of cashiered army officers and foreigners getting together.
Yes, I think what happened in Afghanistan when we were supporting the Afghans in their fight, the Mujahideen in their fight against the Soviets, is that we pushed international adventurers into a relationship with professional killers and created a strong relationship between Pakistan's intelligence agency and the various jihadi groups. And I think in a way that is precisely what we are now doing in Iraq. We know that the remnants of Saddam's regime, criminals, jihadis that are forming indigenously in Iraq as a result of their fury at an inept, what they perceive to be an inept occupation by U.S. troops, are now mingling with, again, international adventurers who are coming in increasingly from Europe. They are coming in from throughout the Middle East. And we know that some of them are coming in from Afghanistan, and they are all working together. And so, once again, I think we are fostering this kind of international jihadi force that could come back and really cause a great problem for us and the rest of the world.
Stephen, what do you think about that?
Well, first, I don't think we created the linkages in Afghanistan that have been asserted just now. We had to acquiesce in these linkages, which were actually established by the Pakistani Intelligence Service, through which we disseminated arms and so forth in Afghanistan, arms and money.
But if we're using the ISI Soviets, to disseminate arms and money, aren't we playing a role in creating that linkage? I mean, isn't that just a sort of a semantic argument, Steve?
No, it's not. And with respect to Iraq, there do seem to be, at this point, a relatively small number of foreigners coming in. Nobody actually knows how many. A number were captured very soon after the war, and they were captured because there was no infrastructure to receive them. So you had non-Iraqis wandering around, bumping into walls, and providing low-hanging fruit for the Coalition Provisional Authority to capture. There may still be people coming in, and if they are, they will represent more of a threat because now there is an infrastructure to receive them. The former regime loyalists have safe houses and a system that can now absorb these people, and they appear to have absorbed them for the purpose of using them as cannon fodder.
I want to see if I can go back a little bit to where we began with studying the situation of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, though, because the recruitment, if it continues there, I mean, are these completely separate stories here? I know that geography separates the two battlefields, but what's happening in the Northwest Frontier provinces and Baluchistan and that kind of lawless regrouping of the insurgents there, is that something that has a bearing on Iraq or how America is seen in the region?
I don't think they're completely different stories. I think that the Al-Qaeda organization has, in a way, morphed into a very broad movement, the goal of which is to destroy the so-called New World Order, to destroy American hegemony, and to fight the West, but particularly America and its instruments of global hegemony, its so-called instruments. And I think the aim is to create a clash between the West and Islam. That is something that bin Laden and his sympathizers have long been hoping to do, and I think they were Iraq gave them a fabulous opportunity.
So they're conscious of sharing that common ground with Iraq, with Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in all areas where they're able to kind of push those wedges between East and West.
Yes, I think what's perhaps most troubling is the polls that we're seeing coming in from about the level of antipathy to the United States as a result of the war in Iraq in Muslim-majority countries, where in a few of those countries, a majority of respondents expressed more confidence in bin Laden than in President Bush as a world leader. That is very troubling.
1-800-423-8255. Back to the phones now, to Marblehead, Massachusetts now. And is it Galil? Is that the proper pronunciation?
Galil.
Close enough. Thanks for calling.
My question is for Jessica Stern, whom I heard, by the way, on the New American Strategies for Security and Peace conference. And was very impressed with what she had to say there. My question is, what her opinion is about the attempted assassination of Musharraf, which has been buried in the news amidst all the triumphalism about Saddam Hussein. It was apparently a very sophisticated, high-tech assassination attempt. And a related question to this is, where does Iran fit in all this, the 800-pound gorilla that no one wants to talk about that seems to benefit the most from the destabilization of the region?
Okay, Galiel, thanks for that. First, on the assassination, which I think he's quite right, people were pointing out yesterday, was a whole lot closer than many people have been coming, just less than a matter of a minute between the motorcade and the bombs.
Right. It actually looks very similar to an attack that was made on the life of Nawaz Sharif, which the group responsible for that was a sectarian group. The military wing of Sipi Sahaba Pakistan, the party, it's called Lashkar-e-Jangvi. It looks very similar, at least based on what we know today. But it does appear that Musharraf has a problem, that his security contingent has to be purged, apparently repeatedly, because there are those within it who are out to get him. And this happened even when he came to Cambridge to speak at Harvard, where it was necessary for this U.S. security forces to be more involved than they otherwise would have been, because he had this problem from within. He was afraid of his own security forces. With Pakistan, it's just so hard to know. Musharraf certainly has an incentive to make it look as though he really does face a problem within Pakistan, that he can't control the jihadis who are now in Afghanistan, moving into Afghanistan, some of them moving into Iraq. So it's not impossible that the entire thing could have been staged. It's not impossible that it was a military, some kind of military group, and it's not impossible that it was a jihadi group, and especially a sectarian group, Lashkar-e-Jangvi.
Stephen, is it's too simple to take a Taliban claim of responsibility for that attack and say, right, that's who did it?
I don't know that the Taliban per se has the capability to do something like this, or it's really part of their bag of tricks. Musharraf has opposition still to some degree within the military, and it may be growing. Nobody really knows, in fact, the degree to which junior officers in the Pakistani army have been influenced by Islamism, given the collapse of the education system in Pakistan.
Stephen, I have to just stop you there. We'll pick this up when we come back after the break. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Simple question, folks. Is it time for the United States to refocus its attention on the capture of bin Laden and Taliban leaders? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And with the capture of Saddam Hussein, is it now time for the United States to refocus its attention on the hunt for Osama bin Laden and the leaders of the Taliban? 1-800-423-TALK. Stephen Simon is with us. He's a senior analyst at the Rand Institute. And Jessica Stern is with us as well. She's a lecturer at the Kennedy School of Government. Let's go to Tony now, who's calling in from Boston. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, first, I just want to tell you guys that you guys are on speakerphone, just to legally inform you. But secondly, I want to just quickly make a couple points. I think that the capture of Osama would be far and away much bigger news than the capture of Saddam. I mean, personally, I was more elated with the capture of Sheikh Mohammed than with Saddam. And I think you would see people almost weeping with tears of joy.
Why? Why do you say Osama bin Laden's more important than Saddam Hussein?
Well, because everybody knows that he is, you know, directly responsible for the World Trade Center attacks. And, you know, and that was, you know, the worst attack on American soil in all our history. And second, my other point is that I don't know if it's likely we will catch him. It's not really a matter of troop numbers, but, I mean, the Pashtun people are known for their loyalty and keeping their promise to their guests. In the Ba'ath Party, there's a lot of backstabbing with the Ba'ath Party. And I think Afghanistan, I don't know what its relevance is anymore to the war on terror. I mean, the international terror training camps have have been obliterated. And I think those people have now repatriated to their homelands.
Tony, let me try and untangle some of this with my guests here, and start with Jessica on that link that exists in everybody's mind in this country between Osama bin Laden and the attacks of September 11th. I mean, that alone, Jessica, would argue for a sort of hot pursuit at all costs, just to bring that person to justice for the acts of that day alone, no?
Yes, I certainly, for the feeling psychologically and also just a sense of justice, it's obviously extremely important. But I would suggest that it could make the war on terrorism far more difficult for us in the immediate term, because all choices available to us would be bad ones, either executing him or keeping him in custody. Either one is a bad choice in terms of what it will do to further mobilize additional recruits and additional attacks on American civilians.
Let me go to Stephen just on something that you were talking about a little bit earlier, Stephen. You're saying that it isn't really a matter of number of troops or boots on the ground. It has a lot more to do with intelligence. But if the intelligence was there, could the United States do more to pursue Osama bin Laden and the Taliban leaders than perhaps it is right now?
I would think so. Yes. What would still be missing would be influence. Now, in Iraq, an occupying power has a lot of influence, and if it's established itself and demonstrated its ability to act with impunity, well, then the former regime begins to lose some of its friends and some of its own leverage, and that in turn, of course, makes intelligence more likely to come up. In any case, intelligence is
a
decisive
thing.
If there were the intelligence, the United States would have the military capability to take advantage of it.
But it's less likely, you're saying, that there would be a close family friend or relative or associate in Afghanistan ready to blow the whistle on bin Laden, such as we understand is the case with Saddam Hussein.
Well, of course. I mean, what carrots and sticks does the U.S. really wield in these areas? None. In Iraq, the U.S. has plenty of both.
And Jessica, one of the things that fascinates me about this, and I see it in a lot of writing that comes from that part of the world, is that the reward itself stands as very little incentive to someone in Afghanistan. The promise of $25 million does not mean the same thing to a person in rural or, in the northwest frontier provinces as it might to someone living in this country.
Well, I think in the tribal area, certainly, the allegiance to bin Laden is such that it wouldn't mean very much, and that life wouldn't mean very much after one had
you got the money, but you're not going to have long to spend it, right?
I mean, it's also the sense of almost spiritual allegiance. Bin Laden is quite a charismatic figure. He has a kind of mystical aura, I think, which Saddam Hussein certainly never acquired. And also, his closest allies felt themselves to be very much under threat. So everyone was a potential victim of Saddam.
So for people, whether they be in Pakistan or Afghanistan, it is more respect or reverence for these people. It's not a question of fear, which is how people related to Saddam Hussein.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's right. There's a spiritual element, or a purported spiritual element.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Boston, Brandon's joining us now. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I just had a quick comment, and that is, I think it's very easy to focus on Osama, and he's very mediagenic. In a way, he's a celebrity. But when we emphasize the importance of Osama, it's misleading, because Al-Qaeda is really a franchise. You know, when Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, died, it's not like when McDonald's went belly up. And, we can say Osama this and Osama that. But if we capture him, it's not going to take away the problem of fundamentalist Islamic terrorism or even Al-Qaeda itself.
Is that a good way of describing it, Stephen? What do you think?
Oh, I agree. I don't think that Al-Qaeda or the movement that evolved from it is going to go away because
Usama is captured. Having said that, he did an atrocious thing against the United States and must be brought to justice, and the administration is going to be committed to that. Whether the sight of bin Laden in a in an orange jumpsuit during a doing a perp walk makes Muslims angrier with the United States than they already are, I think that's unlikely. I would say that the hatred of the United States, the deep, deep animosity that's been revealed in a number of polls, one of which Jessica referred to, show that, you know, the bottom has really fallen out, and there isn't much lower to go.
But he either, Jessica, has some kind of spiritual importance to the people who would join the al-Qaeda cause, or he doesn't. And you know, if he were to be captured, is it really like removing the head of a very large franchise operation where everything just continues as if he were still in power?
Well, I was talking about the spiritual aura in response to a question as to why it's harder to collect intelligence about
right.
where he is. I think that if he were captured, most Muslims would rejoice. I think that's the first thing we need to point out. But I'm concerned that the members of this franchise, the members of bin Laden's, the formal member organizations of bin Laden's International Islamic Front, the informal members, the individuals who have formed their own cells, the groups that have informal links, they would be mobilized. And so I just think that there would be this very unfortunate downside. It's critically important that we keep looking for him. But in terms of the actual impact, I think that the capture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is probably more important just in terms of eroding the group's ability to function, the original group's ability to function.
1-800-423-8255. Brandon, thanks for that. Next to Greensboro, North Carolina. Steve, you're with us. Go ahead.
Hi. My comment, and I'd like to first say thanks for taking my call. My comment is about all this rhetoric about who's going to do what to us, when, where, how to protect ourselves. It just makes me want to know why. Why do they hate us? What did we do? And it seems to me if we could do whatever steps we had to take to turn it around to where they were yelling up with America, this whole war on terrorism would be self-policing.
Well, it certainly brings us back to basics. I mean, it's a question we've been asking for 2 years, but perhaps by posing it again at the end of 2003, Steve, you might have an observation, or Stephen Simon, I should say, might have an observation for our caller here on how it's changed and whether or not anything that's been done has altered the basic fundamental question.
I don't think that there's been an alteration of the fundamentals, as you rightly refer to them. The underlying conditions that created this jihad movement that has proved to be so vexing have not gone away in 2 years, and indeed they may not go away for 25 years.
And tick off the two or three key ones there, just for Steve's benefit, if you would, Stephen.
Sure. First is the complete absence of political participation for most people in the countries from which this movement emerged. They don't have a voice. Secondly, they don't have jobs. In these regions, economic growth has basically been in a standstill for 20 years while the rest of the world has marched forward. At the same time, population growth in these areas is essentially, you know, it's runaway population growth. And that's made things even more horrible. The problem is that the United States has been linked to all these problems by activists in these countries who are looking for an explanation. And they look at their own horrible governments that have created these conditions, and they see those governments linked to us, and they see us as supporting those governments. And it's made them very angry.
So, Jessica Stern, The president says, you know, this is part of the involvement in Iraq is a part of trying to turn that all around, and others argue that it's simply fueling this terrorism of people committed to attacking the United States. Can you keep track of both of those at the same time and say, well, no, I mean, it might work, but it's a 5, 10, 15-year enterprise, and in the meantime, all these other downsides are presented. How do you see it?
Well, I agree with everything that Steve just said, but the one thing that I would add, something that has come out of my interviews of terrorists over the last 5 years, is that one of the things that terrorist leaders really concentrate on is this feeling of humiliation and trying to strengthen and almost construct a feeling of humiliation in among their followers and making it clear that America is responsible for humiliating them. And indeed, unfortunately, I think the pictures on Al Jazeera of U.S. troops and tanks occupying Baghdad, this very important city to Muslims, is feeding into those leaders' attempts to make it clear that, to prove, and I say that in quotes, that America is out to humiliate the Islamic world.
Well, will those same leaders use the images of Saddam Hussein, looking as he did on the weekend, to try and persuade people that further evidence of American humiliation of leaders in that part of the world?
Well, of course, I don't know, but it seems less likely to me. I don't think that Saddam Hussein was beloved by very many people. So I'm not sure that adds to their mobilization strategy. But I do think that the way we went into Iraq with essentially no allies and quite ill-prepared to create a functioning state has really harmed our efforts. And certainly in the near and medium term, things are worse for the moment, I believe, rather than better.
Stephen, quick last one to you, though. The one thing that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden share is that they, in the eyes of some of these rural kids in Pakistan, thumbed their nose at the United States.
Yeah, it's a great virtue in the eyes of many. They are perceived as doing worse than thumbing their nose at the United States. Bin Laden actually killed thousands of Americans in an audacious strike, and that's an inspirational thing to many people throughout the world who distrust and fear the United States.
Stephen,
and
we're out of
Saddam
time.
Hussein did the same.
I thank you for being with us on the program today. Stephen Simon is a senior analyst at the Rand Institute. Jessica Stern, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jessica's a lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. We also heard on this program from Masood Ansari, senior reporter for the news magazine Newsline in Karachi, Pakistan, and Scott Baldoff, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.